morning, everyone. Today's daf in a chagiga, daf chav talad. Okay, and coming close to the end of the Masechta, a couple more days to go. Yom Kippur, mostly Yom Kippur. Sunday morning, we finished the Masechta. And of course, that means we also finished Seder Moed. Okay, let's get right into it. We thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf will be learned Zechman Shmaslos and Ben Zaltzman. Look back at the Mishnah. The Mishnah back on Chof Amud Beis told us that when it comes to Kodesh, we're going to be machmer by Kodesh. 11 various chumras that we have by Kodesh that we have over Truma. Kodesh obviously represents more Kedusha. The name kind of gives it away. It's called Kodesh. But anytime when you're dealing with Karbanos and Achilas HaKarban, so we're going to be more machmer in the world of Tum and Tahara. And this comes up over here in the third parak of Chagiga, the final parak of Chagiga, simply because on Yom Tov we're going to go up to the base of Mikdash, we're going to go to Yerushalayim, and we're going to eat carbon, and we got to know what chumras that we have to abide by. The Gemara now a couple of times broke the 11 in the Mishnah up into 6 and 5, the first 6 and the last 5. And what kind of division is that, the breaking up of 6 and 5? The first 6 are rooted in the Araisa concepts, meaning they are chumra derabbanans, but chumra derabbanans that are rooted in concepts of chatzitza shvara, shvafer sanod, and various Araisa concepts. The last 5 are strictly derabbanan, meaning they are just simply rabbinic stringencies imposed in the world of Kodesh, because malos, because we have chumras by Kodesh. We're just simply going to treat the Kodesh with more kedusha and more susceptibility to kedusha than we are going to treat truma. Okay, we have in the Gemara in the past couple of days. Now, that already took us all the way back to Chof Amud Beis. We're behind. We're in Daf Chav Gimel. We're in Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. And we've discussed in detail a number of the chumras that are mentioned in the Mishnah. Not all of them. The Gemara doesn't spend a lot of time with all of them, but the Gemara spends significant time with a considerable number of them. The first, second, third, the Gemara spent some time on. And now we're up to the six chumra mentioned in the Mishnah. So, and the sixth chumra mentioned in the Mishnah, if you look back in the Mishnah, is that kelim nigmarim b'tahara, that if you have a kli which is finished in the state of tahara, tzrichim tefila l'kodesh, so you have to tovel in kodesh. All right, which basically means then that prior to you finishing the, in other words, we're talking about the ulam, we're talking about the craftsman. So prior to him actually finishing the product, it's obviously it's not a kli. If it's not a kli, it's an emakabel tuma. We're obviously discussing once it gets to the point of a kli, and now it's. I was going to say mukshel l'kabel tuma. The terminology, it's wrong terminology, but it's the right idea, meaning that now it's ready. It's ready now to receive tuma. The mukshar usually is in reference to food, to ochlim and to mashkim. But over here, the idea is basically the same idea. It's now at the point where it is ready to receive tumah. So the Mishnah says, now what do? You tovel in the mikvah. Tovel in the mikvah? It didn't become tameh. Meaning, exactly. That's exactly the point. That's the chumr derabbanan. That's the stringency derabbanan. That for the purposes of Kodesh, we're going to be toveling it in the mikvah, despite the fact that it did not become tameh. You remember now the Gemara. That was the Mishnah. Now you remember the Gemara. The Gemara, when first discussing this, Gemara goes all the way back to Chav Gimel. I'm sorry, not all the way back. Not so far back. Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. So let's start the Gemara again. We did this Gemara yesterday, but I'm just going to start from the beginning of the sugya. So I'm starting right now. Chav Gimel Amud Aleph at the two dots. Kel Nigmar B'Tahara.
Does that mean you will have to tovel every time you put kodesh? Every time?
No, just the first time.
The first time was a tovel already.
I understand.
So then the chumra should apply every time you put in.
Okay, could be, but no. The assumption is just the first time. Well, you see, based on the Gemara's explanation, it's only going to be for the first time. Okay, the Gamrina Man. The Gemara's question. We did this part yesterday. Who finished the kli? So Elam the Gamrina Chaver Lama Luhu Tvila. So the Gemara says, if it's a chaver, someone who is careful about tuma tahara, so then I cannot understand why in the world would we need to tovel it. You have a chaver, someone who's meticulous, who's someone who's punctilious about tuma taharas. Okay, good. So then it doesn't require tefila. So Elul de Gamrina Amar. So the Gemara says, okay, now Amar finished it. So Gomrin b'tahara karilu. So the Gemara says, okay, the Amar finished it. So then the language of the Mishnah makes no sense. Gomrin b'tahara. It's finished in tahara. No, it's not. It's the Amar. Amar is not careful about tuma taharas. So the clothing, we're just making an obvious point, the clothing of the Am Haaretz is Tameh. So if the clothing of the Am Haaretz is Tameh, the Am Haaretz himself obviously is treated as if he's Tameh, so then we're not going to call the Kli Nigmar B'Tahara. So Amar Rav Barshu, Amar Rav Mas, Amar Shmuel, Olam Dig Amrinu Chavar. So the Gemara says, you're right, we're going to go back to our first point, which is that the Chavar finished it. Omishum Tzinur Da Am Haaretz. So the Gemara says, and I'll tell you what the problem is. The problem is that the Chavar is conversing with an Am Haaretz. He's having interactions with an Amaretz. A conversation by itself doesn't mean anything in the world of Tuma Tahara. They could talk all they want, but that's not going to be metame the chaver. The problem is that in the course of conversation, so there's a little bit of exchange of spit, especially if there's arguing going on. Okay, so another, so maybe again, it's a chumrah, so that's it's a consideration. So maybe some spit from the Amaretz went onto the clothing or onto the kli of the uman, and maybe that's how the kli becomes tame. So the Gemara says, "Dafal ema." So the Gemara says, "When did the spit fall on the kli?" So ilam emikam deligmerei. So did the spit fall on the kli before it was finished as a kli? So halav manuhu. So the Gemara says that wouldn't be a problem because if it's not yet a kli, it is not susceptible yet to tumah. Elabasa degamrei. So the Gemara says it must be that the spit fell on the kli after it was finished. So mezazarbu. So the Gemara says, don't you think the chaver is aware of this and isn't he going to be cautious about it? Meaning once the kli is finished, the chaver now knows it's as if the gun is locked and loaded. By analogy. Meaning once the kli is finished, it is now ready to become tame. So if an amaretz walks into the store, don't you think the chaver is going to put it behind the glass and make sure that the kli that he made in tahara remains tahor? And why then at that point in time are we going to have a concern that the amaretz is going to put his spit by accident on the kli? The chaver is going to make sure that won't happen. So la'olam ekame degamrei v'doma be'ina degamrei adayin lachahi. So the Gemara says, here's the concern. The concern is that while the Amaretz comes into a store and the kli is not a finished product, and therefore the owner is not worried because the item is not ready to be mekabel tuma. So maybe, again, this is all maybe. Maybe what then will happen is that the spit of the Amaretz is going to go on the kli. Then the craftsman is going to finish the kli. I know it's indelicate. He's going to finish a kli with spit on it. But he's then going to finish the kli. And once he finishes the kli, and if the spit remained wet, so the spit now becomes an avatumma. It doesn't become. It was an avatumma. And it will therefore transfer tumma to the kli. All this is a concern. And because of this concern, so therefore when it comes to kodesh, you have to tovel the kodesh in the mikvah in order to remove the tumma. Ad kan divrei ha-gemara, an explanation of the Mishnah. That's the chashash, that's the concern of our Mishnah.
Why don't you ask the same question? Why it says ningling b'tahala? It wasn't ningling b'tahala.
Right. So what I'll say, I'm not. Your question is good. I'm not gonna. What I will say is that it's nigmar b'tahara with a chashash. Meaning, again, if it's in the Mishnah, if it's in this Mishnah, that means that the likelihood is that this didn't happen. That's the likelihood. And then, as a chashash and as an additional concern and as a chomer when it comes to kodesh, you have to tov in the mikvah. And the Gemara here is just giving an explanation of why you would have to tov in the kodesh, tov the kli. Okay, now the Gemara starts off now in the next part of the discussion, Tefillin, Harashem Shlo. Now, Gemara, this is where we got to yesterday, and here's where it's going to get a little complicated. The Gemara says now that, yes, you have to tovel in the mikvah, that's the Chumrah. The Mishnah in Chagiga says that any time you finish a kli, and even if you finish Batar, you have to tovel in the mikvah, but you don't have to wait till nightfall. Now, the Mishnah doesn't say that, but it's pretty clear in the Mishnah, because the Mishnah just requires toveling in the mikvah. And if the Harav Shemesh was necessary, so the Mishnah would have written it, the Mishnah didn't write it, it doesn't require Harav Shemesh. Now let's take a step back, before we go further in the Gemara, because the Gemara is about to get complicated. But let's just take a step back. Normally, if the Kli were to become Tame, meaning, and we know the Kli becomes Tame, with a bona fide Tumah, so how do you eradicate any Tumah that was sourced in a D'oraisa? So the way to eradicate Tumah is to both Tov on the Mikvah. This is true by people, it's true by Kalim. To tov on the mikvah and to wait until nightfall. That is the only way to eradicate tumah, min haTorah. The tumah that was contracted on a Torah level. If I touch a sheretz, the only way I'm going to become tahor is by toveling in the mikvah. After I tov on the mikvah, I got most of my tumah away. There's still a little residual tumah. And then how is that removed? Harav Shemesh, by waiting until nightfall. Okay, first Mishnah and Brachos, we learn this together. Right, when the Mishnah says, when do you say Shema at night? So when the Kohanim eat Truma. Well, why the Kohanim eating Truma at night? Because that day they tovel in the mikvah, they wait until nightfall, and then they're going to be able to eat Truma that night. Prior to that point in time, they're what's called the status between toveling in the mikvah and Harav Shemesh. That status is what's called a Tvul Yom. And with a Tvul Yom status, you still have a little residual Tuma, and therefore you have to wait until nightfall. What the Gemara is now pointing out is that when our Mishnah says that a Kli becomes Tami from an Amah Aretz, it's a chumrah, it is merely a stringency. I say merely, not that we're dismissing it, but it's merely a stringency, and that allows us to understand that in our Mishnah, when you tovel the kli in the mikvah, it doesn't require hair of shemesh. It doesn't require hair of shemesh. What do you mean? Any kli that becomes tummy has needs hair of shemesh. Correct. This is a chomer de rabbanan, and therefore the chomer is only for tefillah and not for hair of shemesh. Okay, good. That's the point of the Gemara, and that was that. That's that part so far is, I'm not going to say easy, but at least we understand that. So tefillah in hair of shemesh. And now what the Gemara is going to do is it's going to build an argument that not every Tana subscribes to this viewpoint, and notably Rebbe Lazar in a Mishnah Parah does not subscribe to this viewpoint. And let us learn together now the Mishnah in Parah. Now let's say I take a tube and I cut the tube from the ground in order to use to carry around my Efer Chatas. Efer Chatas is, you know, I need to go around Eretz Yisrael with my Efer Chatas. Someone becomes tummy with Thomas Mace. So I'm going to go around the country and with my little canister of Efer Chatas, I'm going to, you know, go over to the person, mix it together with Mayim Chaim and sprinkle, and good. So you want to create a canister for your Efer Chatas. The Gemara over here describes a shfoferis, it's a reed, it's a tube, but it's one that's cut from the ground. So basically it's a reed that you cut from the ground, you're going to hollow out the reed, and now it's going to become a cylindrical tube in order to carry around your Efer Chatas. I love watching on Sukkot some ingenuity in terms of how people carry around the lulav on Sukkot. So basically it's the same basic idea. So shofer shechach lechatos, Rav Elazar mar yitbo miad. So Rav Elazar says that when you cut it, you have to tovel in the mikvah. Okay, and Rabbi Yoshua mar yitma v'achakach yitbo. And Rabbi Yoshua says no. First you metame it, and then you tovel in the mikvah. Okay, that is a Mishnah in Parah. So far, what we have in this Mishnah in Parah is a machlokas tanaim in terms of what is the proper procedure after you cut the tube for that you're going to end up using for your Efer Paraduma. For the ashes of the paraduma. Either Rebbe Lazar's position is, which is Yitovel, period, and Rabbi Yeshua says, no, first you're mitame it, meaning by design, intentionally contaminating the reed, and then only after being mitame the reed, then and only then are Yitovel in the mikvah. Okay, now, Havinam Vad Dechaz Chaman. So the Gemara says, again, a more context. Let's understand this better. Who cut it from the ground? Elam the chadcha chaver lamali tefila. So if the chaver cut it, so then I don't understand. So why do I need to tovel it? Well, the chadcha ma'aretz. So the Gemara says, okay, so the ma'aretz cut it from the ground. Bahalem Rabbi Yoshua yitma v'yitbal hatamidikai. So then I don't understand Rabbi Yoshua's position. Okay, so make sure to tovel it. Let me take that back. Let me say it correctly. Make sure to be metameit. Make sure to be metameit. What do you mean? The ma'aretz cut it from the ground. By the simple virtue of the fact that he handled it means that the item is already tameh. So the Gemara says, you're right, we're going to go back to our original position that a chaver was the one who cut from the ground. So the Gemara says, and the problem is that sinur d'amaretz, once again, we go back to the spit of the amaretz. So the Gemara says, d'nafal ema. So the Gemara says, when did the spit fall onto the reed? If you tell me that it fell before you cut it, so now basically I have a reed that's connected to the ground. You know what that's called? I'm going to use a very fancy word. It's called grounded. Meaning, something connected to the ground is not subject to Tumah Tahara. So halav manahu. It's not a kli. So the Gemara says, so it must be after he cut it. So I know this conversation, this discussion should sound familiar, because this is exactly the same discussion we had regarding the explanation of Ma'amish and Chagiga, and now you see how these two discussions are running parallel with one another. So the Gemara says, Ve'ela basa dechatcha. So the Gemara says, it must be that the Amar spittle came into contact with it after it was cut. So the Gemara says, I understand, the Chavar is going to be careful, especially considering the fact that we're about to use this tube for the ashes of the Paraduma. Obviously, the Chavar is going to be careful. So the Gemara says, okay, so you know what happened? I'll give you the explanation of what happened. Really, the Amaret spit went down to the reed before it was cut from the ground. At that point in time, it's not subject to Tumah. It's not even a kli yet. It's grounded. And then what happens is that the chaver cut it, not being aware, not realizing that there was spit of an Amaret on the kli. The spit of the Amaret on the kli is still Tameh, as long as it's wet. And then after fashioning to a kli, and now the spit's on the kli, so therefore it's going to become Tameh. Okay, period. Adkan. So far what we've done is we've learned a Mishnah and Parah together. And furthermore, we gave an explanation almost identical, not almost, identical to the explanation we gave our Mishnah in Chagiga in terms of what my concern is. My concern is that the Amara spit fell on the item before it was manufactured into a kli, and it stayed on the item after it was manufactured in the kli, and that's why it's tummy, and that's why I need to tov on the mikvah. So now with all that stated, let's go back to the Mishnah and Parah. Let's think about the two opinions in the Mishnah and Parah. The first opinion in the Mishnah and Parah is Rav Elazar, who says just tov on immediately. And Rav Yehoshua's position is be mitame it, and afterwards tov on it. Now, Bisham le Rav Yehoshua, the Gemara says, now, interesting, I understand Rav Yehoshua's position. This is the part that's complicated, but hopefully we'll navigate. I understand Rav Yehoshua's position, the Ika Hekeri L'Tzedukim, because, you know, according to Rav Yehoshua, in the world of Parah Aduma, we must be unusual. We have to do things a little bit differently in the world of Parah Aduma, and that is because of the Tzedukim. There's a major debate, you remember this, from the very beginning of Yuma, day one of Yuma. We talked about this. There's a major debate between the Tzedukim and the Prushim as it pertains to Parah Aduma. What's the major debate? The Tzedukim, who do not subscribe to Torah Shabbat per se, that when you get together, when you prepare the Parah Aduma, now the Parah Aduma is mentioned in the Torah, Perek Yates of Sefer Bamidbar, when you prepare the Parah Aduma, so it has to be done b'ish tahor. It has to be done with a person who's totally tahor. When I say totally, I mean he both toveled in the mikvah and experienced Tahara Shemesh. If you don't have a person who went through both of those stages of Tahara, he can't be involved in the Parah Aduma. And the truth of the matter is, without a Torah Shabbat Peh, you'd understand. The whole idea of Parah Aduma is that it is a source of Tahara. It provides Tahara for others, so I understand that the person preparing it has to be totally Tahor. And anyway, the Torah says, Ish Tahor. The man has to be Tahor. Yet, that's the Pashtus HaKra. That's the simple Pshat in the Kra, if you will. It may not be Pashtus. Okay, whatever. That's their understanding of the Torah. And meanwhile, we, the Purushim, who have Torah Shabbat Peh, we know that there was two Torahs given to Moshe Rabbeinu, a Torah Shabbat and a Torah Shabbat Peh. So part of our Torah Shabbat Peh is that when it comes to Parah Aduma, the Kohanim that are involved and the Kalim that are used in Parah Aduma don't have to have experienced Erev Shemesh. It would be sufficient if they just experienced Tefillah. That's the halacha based on Torah Shabbat Peh as it pertains to Parah Aduma. Okay, good. So now, basically what bothers the Gemara is the following. Here we have a scenario in where I have a concern regarding the reed used for Parah Aduma, which is identical to basically any kli that's manufactured. Anytime I have a kli that's manufactured, what do I have to do? I have to tov on the mikvah. Why? Because the Mishnah Chagiga says so. It's a chumrah derabbanan. But that's true by any kli. So now we're preparing a kli for the Parah Aduma. So now imagine, okay, we just cut the reed to hold the A for Parah Aduma. Now imagine. What are we going to do? We're going to tov on the mikvah. That's what we always do. That's done in every scenario. That's the Mishnah Chagiga. Any kli finished by a craftsman needs to be tov on the mikvah. So now, Tzedukim, we know you're wrong. How do we know you're wrong? Well, now, we know you're wrong because we have Torah Shabbat Peh. We're going to demonstrate that you're wrong. How are we going to demonstrate that you're wrong? Because we're going to take this kli and we're going to tov on the mikvah. And we're going to show you that, again, we know because of Torah Shabbat Peh, but we're going to demonstrate that you're wrong because we're toveling in the mikvah, and we're going to use it right after the tefillah. Okay? Tzedukim, you're watching. This is a demonstration that you're wrong. Okay. Lahotzim elibam shel tzedukim. So the Gemara says, according to Rabbi Yehoshua, I get it. That's why when I cut the shofaris for the Parah Aduma, I have to go out of my way to be metameit. Because if I'm not going to be metameit, so what am I doing? The same thing I'd be doing for any kli after it's finished production. After the finishing of the production, I would tov on the mikvah. So if I'm doing the same thing over here for the shvafers, for the Parah Aduma, I'm not behaving in any unusual fashion. And there's no demonstration that the Tzedukim are wrong. So Rav Yehoshua says, when you finish the shvafers, what do you do? First you're metameit, and then you tov on the mikvah. Okay, so that's what the Gemara's point is. I understand Rav Yehoshua, but Elul Rav Elazar. Sorry, Hainu Deika. I'm sorry, Zayi Balol Mekam Dechamicha. So the Bishlam the Rav Yehoshua Hainu Deika. I care. Let's dukim did not matamim hayu konas or if it's a paro. Laotim eliban shotzis dukim shayu omrim ben murav eshamas haysanasis. The Gemara here quotes. We saw this on the first day of Yuma that the person who burned the Parah Aduma would do is that he would be metame himself, or somebody would be metame him, right? Coming to have him come into contact with the sheriffs. Then he would tov on the mikvah. Then he would burn the paraduma. And all that because tzedukim, you're wrong. Because it's tzedukim, if they saw that, they would say, no, what? No. He has to wait till Ha'er Shemesh. That's how they understand the Torah. Okay, but we have Torah Shabbat Peh. That's incorrect. So we go out of our way to demonstrate that tzedukim are wrong. So here too, in the world of creating the tube to hold the ashes of the paraduma, so we have to do something different to show them that they're wrong. So according to Rebbe Lazar, good, I get it. You know what we did that was different? We first were metame, the klish falferes, and then we told them the mikvah. But Ella Rebbe Lazar, Yamar b'sham abal mabin and herav shemesh anadika, I care let's dedukim. Ella Yamar b'am alabin and herav shemesh, my care let's dedukim ika. But now let's turn to Rebbe Lazar's opinion. Rebbe Lazar, what did Rebbe Lazar require regarding the shfoferis, regarding the two for the paraduma? Yeah, tov on the mikvah. What? That's what we always do. So what is unusual, what's strange for Rebbe Lazar? And this is the part that's complicated. What's strange for Rebbe Lazar? So the Gemara therefore surmises, well, if he's just toveling in the mikvah, so isn't that what we always do with every kli that's manufactured by any craftsman, or craftsman who's a chaver? And so therefore the Gemara says, you know what, according to Rebbe Lazar, it also has to be unusual. And you know why it's unusual according to Rebbe Lazar? Because he generally requires tefillah and Erev Shemesh. And by the Paraduma, you know what he's going to require? Only tefillah, not Erev Shemesh. That must be the unusual aspect of the Shofaris according to Rebbe Eliezer. And that is how the Gemara now concludes that in general, according to Rebbe Lazar, what is required? Tefillah and Erev Shemesh. What's unusual about the Shofaris for the Paraduma? Only tefillah and Erev Shemesh. Okay? That is the Gemara's logical progression. The Gemara now goes on to say, my hekel let's do kimika. Amarav asu ketame sheretz. So the Gemara says, the logical progression is great, but you could say another conclusion. Meaning you didn't have to conclude that according to Rebbe Lazar, in general you need Erev Shemesh. Maybe we'll argue that according to Rebbe Lazar, in general you don't need Erev Shemesh. Like our Mishnah says, our Mishnah Chagiga says that when you have a kli manufactured by a chaver, tov on the mikvah, and that's it. And then you go forward. And you can use it for whatever you want. And maybe Rebbe Lazar agrees to that as well. What about the Mishnah Parah? The Mishnah Parah says that according to Rebbe Lazar, what do you do with a kli? You tov on the mikvah. That's what we always do. What's so unusual about that? Suggests the Gemara, maybe what is unusual in this case, in the Shfaferis, is that not only do the Chachamim say that the tube is Tameh, but what degree of Tuma? Kitame Sheretz. It's as if it came into contact with Tuma Sheretz. The Gemara said, I'm sorry, take a look at Rashi. Ki'ilu nagu b'sheretz l'inyan minyan rishon v'sheini. In other words, if it came into contact with the Sheretz, so what degree of Tuma? We're going to be talking now. Sheretz is an avatoma. Coming to contact with the Sheretz, that means that it's a rishon. So, fine. So that is the unusual nature of the halacha of paraduma. That the degree of tumah, it's a higher degree of tumah, in that it, we're going to treat it as if it came into contact with the sheretz. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, I don't think you're right, because we have the following braisa. Chadcho matvila ton tvila. That if I cut the reed, and I tov on the mikvah, the one who cut it and handled it needs to tovel in the mikvah as well. Now the Gemara says, why would the person who handled it, obviously prior to you toveling in the mikvah, why would he too need to tovel in the mikvah? That doesn't make sense. So the Gemara says, before we go on the Gemara, because let's think about this. If we're going to treat the shfoferes as if it came into contact with the sheretz, what does that make the sheretz? A rishon. Right? The sheretz itself is an av, and then the shfoferes itself would be a rishon. A person touching the sheretz. If a person touches a kli, which is a rishon, does the person become tameh? No. So then how do you understand this braisa that says that the person themselves needs to tovel in the mikvah? So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. You know what degree of tumah the chachamim imposed on the shfaferis? As if it came into contact with the mace. Now I understand. Now if it came into contact with the mace, so now the person touching the shfaferis is himself tameh. The Gemara says, all right, but that's too far. So the Gemara says, Ihachi tibai hazash li shivishvi. Okay, good. So now the person who came into contact with Tumas Meis needs to go through a 7-day Tahara process. Alamatanya, the Gemara says, Chot chamat bila, taron tvila. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's revisit that Braisa again. The Braisa says that when you cut in, you tovel in the mikvah, the person who handled it needs to tovel. Seemingly right away. Ela, aso ketami meis bishvi shalom. So the Gemara says, so you know what? The Chachamim imposed the tum on the Shofaris, and it's unusual in that the degree of Tumah that imposed on the Shofaris is a higher level of Tumah, and what's the sweet spot? What level of Tumah was imposed by the Chachamim on the Shofaris? Answer, it's going to be treated as if it were day 7 of Tumas Meis, meaning that it's it's as if this kli came into contact with mace 7 days ago, undergone the tahara process that normally a person in the kli goes through, with which is a sprinkling of the paradu on day 3 and day 7, and the chachamim imposed tuma as if this kli were on its 7th day of the tahara process, somebody touching it, so he'll only be tame for 1 day.
That is cool up there.
Well, because generally speaking, a kli, in other words, in the general manufacturing of a kli, where our Mishnah Chagig says it needs to be tovold, we don't treat it like an avatama. We don't treat it like a source of tuma. It's not going to be metame another person. The only thing that it'll be doing is it'll be being metame kodesh. That's what our Mishnah says. In terms of the shvaferes, the chachamim gave it a higher degree of tuma, and they're going to treat it like day 7 of tumas meis. It engenders. Truth of the matter is, as it stands right now, thankfully, the Gemara is as complicated as it probably could get. But it does engender a very interesting discussion, because basically what the Gemara is saying is that what the Chachamim imposed, the degree of Tumah the Chachamim imposed, was not a category of Tumah, but a subcategory. Meaning not just Tumas Meis, but day 7 of Tumas Meis. That's an interesting spot to put the Shvaferis in. And furthermore, the person who touches it, what degree of tumah does he have? Tumas meis for 1 day, right? Like, think of it this way: if I were to, you know, you sit around the table and you ask trivia questions, and ask the following trivia question: give me a scenario where a person's tummy tumas meis and they'll be tummy only for 1 day. It's a head scratcher. Doesn't, generally speaking, that doesn't exist. Usually, when you come into contact with a meis or tumas meis, you're tummy for 7 days. When will that happen? So it's obviously on a Torah level that won't happen. On a Derabbanan level, here we have it. Okay, Amar Abayin. That is explanation number one. So again, in this complex in the Gemara that we're in right now, we want to know what is unusual for Rabbi Elazar. That's our question of the Gemara over here. Where the Shvoferis, after it's been cut from the ground and before I'm storing the Efer Chatas, the Efer Paraduma in the reed, so it needs to be tovel. According to Rav Elazar, you just tovel and you move on. And remember that when it comes to Paraduma, we have to do it in an unusual way. Me'lahotzi shaliba shal tzedukim. To tell the tzedukim that they're wrong and to demonstrate that they're wrong. So, according to Rav Elazar, what's so unusual? So, answer number one of the Gemara, you know what's unusual? The degree of tuma that the Shvoferis will have. Instead of having a general tumah as described in our Mishnah and Chagiga, which it's only going to be metame kodesh, so the Gemara says that what's unusual is that for the shvaferis it will have the status of an avatumah. More specifically, day 7 of tumas meis. That's one answer. Amar Abaye Shlo Amar Karda Metame Moshav. So Abaye says maybe we could suggest the following. I skipped an important line. Okay. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. There's no chidushim in paraduma, meaning the laws of Tumah Tahara are the same laws for paraduma as it would apply to anywhere else. So now what we're saying is that the degree of Tumah of that Shofaris is going to be a higher degree than normal? Well, that seems to violate this rule. So the Gemara says, Abaye says, no. When it comes to that rule of la'olam lochitshu davar bepara, no, that's in regards to basic halachas of, let's say, for example, a zav. The Gemara says, what do we know by Zav? Zav sits on an item, the item is Tame. With what's called Tumas Medras, meaning that the Kli that the Zav sits on is going to be Tame to the same degree that the Zav himself is. And furthermore, even if he's not actually touching the item itself. For example, 10 seats piled one on top of another, the Zav sits on the top seat, each of those 10 seats is supporting his weight, each of those 10 seats are going to be an avatumah. That's the special halacha of Tumas Medrash when it comes to Zav. However, if I took a bucket, which I normally use for water and to wash the floors, and in other words, a regular bucket, and I turn the bucket over and I sit down on the item, and I'm a Zav and I sit down on the item, is that item going to become Tameh? The answer is no. This halacha of Tumas Medrash is only for things which are designed and built to sit on. However, if a person says, hey, you know what, let's get back to work, and you take the bucket that you sit on, you turn it back over, and now you're going to be using it to go back to work, that's not a moshav, that's not considered a seat, and therefore it will not receive Tumas Medrash. Yoshev al Kli, let me just read this again. So the exclusion to that would be the example like a bucket, where basically I say, okay, let's get back to work, and I take the bucket that I'm sitting on, I turn it over, and that's not subject to Tumas Medrash. When the Braisa previously made the statement of Lo Chidshu Davar Bapara, that there's no Chiddush by Para, that's speaking specifically to a scenario in which this halacha of Zav does not get bent or violated when it comes to Paraduma. But in terms of the Reed Shvaferis and the degree of Tumah that's going to receive, so generally the degree of Tumah by a manufactured item is only going to be, that's going to be Metame Kodesh. As per Mishnah Chagiga, when it comes to Paraduma, it's going to get a higher level of Tumah. What's the higher level of Tumah? So again, it'll become Tumas Meis, and more specifically, Shvi Shalo, only on the seventh day. Admittedly, that was a difficult sugya in the Gemara. There's no two ways about it. And it's just, what the Gemara did was just simply try to understand, based on our Mishnah, and based on the Deek in our Mishnah says that when you finish a Kli, you Tovel, and then you can go on, it doesn't require Harav Shemesh. Does every Tana agree to that? Rav Yeshua certainly does. Does Rav Elazar agree to that? That was the Gemara's discussion, and the Gemara argues that, yes, we can envision that even Rav Elazar agrees to our Mishnah as well, that you only need to Tovel the Mikvah, and no more than that. Next, Hakli Mitzarev Masha Betoch LaKodesh Avalo LaChuma. The next item up for discussion in the Gemara is this idea that when I have Kodesh inside of a Kli, and let's say the Kodesh are comprised of granules, meaning it's not one liquid, it's not one cohesive unit, but rather it's granules. So generally speaking, and if I have, let's say, a Shlishi touching Kodesh, let's say I have two pieces of meat side by side, and I come along now with truma, which is pasul. The truma became disqualified, which means that the truma itself is shlishi, and it touches one piece of meat. That one piece of meat becomes kodesh. What about the piece right next to it that was not touched by the truma? It's fine. Why is it fine? Because when it comes to kodesh, you stop at revi. So the piece of meat that was touched by the pasul truma, that's revi. The piece next to it, it's fine. That's general. Another chumrah when it comes to Kodesh, if I have these items, separate items, but in one Kli, the Kli unifies the items. So all the items now are considered one singular entity. So now when I have Tumah coming into contact with one item in the bowl, all the items become Tumah, as if everything in the Kli is one single entity. To which now the Gemara discusses this. The Gemara says, "Aklim mitzarif mashu b'toch l'kodesh v'alu l'chumah minahan emili." Gemara wants a source. Amar Rav Chanin, Amar Krak, Havachas, Asar Zav Malei Katoris. Pasuk we're familiar with in Parshas Naso, describing the gifts offered by the Nesim for the Hakamas HaMishkan. So the Gemara says, "Kafachas, one spoon or bowl, Asar Zav Malei Katoris, and it's filled with Katoris." So Hakas v'asol l'kol mashu b'kaf achas. The fact that the Torah says that it's one bowl, the Torah could have just simply said kaf, and that by itself would have told us that it's one. The extra word of achas tells me not that it's just one, but it unifies. It takes everything inside of it and makes it one entity. Masa Rav Kahana. So Rav Kahana says, hold on one second. What about the following Mishnah? Mishnah Nedi Yotosif Rabbi Akiva Sols Vaktors Valavona. Vagacham Shem Naga Tol Yom B'Mikzas Apostles Kulo. Rabbi Akiva adds to the list. Solas. Fine flour. Ketoris. That's the incense. Alavona. That's frankincense. And also coals. Coals is interesting because coals is wood. But either way, but in the world of Kodesh, in the world of the Beis Hamikdash, it too is susceptible to tumah. That if a tfulyom again, is a person who tovled in the mikvah but has not yet experienced Erev Shemesh. If he touches part of it, it all becomes tameh. So the Gemara says, v'hadra bananhi. So the Gemara says, now that Mishnah Adios is not talking on a Daraisa level, it's talking on a Durabanan level. Now how do I know that? Mean my Midikdani Reisha. Because I look at that Mishnah and Eidos in its Eidos in its context, that the ashes of the Paraduma, where someone whose tummy touches some of it, it all becomes tummy. That ashes, that's not susceptible to Toma Anadar Raisa level. It's only susceptible to Toma Anadar Abana level. And meanwhile, so in the context of that Mishnah, it's talking about Durabanan. And then the Katani hosts Rabbi Akiva. And then the Mishnah says, and Rabbi Akiva adds on to that. So in other words, if Rabbi Akiva is piggybacking on the first part of the Mishnah, and the first part of the Mishnah is talking on a Durabanan level, obviously the remainder, the balance of the Mishnah is talking on a Durabanan level. So therefore, what bothers the Gemara now is, how did you just give a drusha that a Kli unifies based on a Pasuk and Parashas Naso, when meanwhile the Mishnah Adios in its context certainly seems like this halacha of unification of a bowl is a derabana, not a deraisa. I'm Reish Lakish, Mishum Bar Kaparo, Lo Nitzrucha Ela, L'Shayari Mincha. Deraisa. Sarach L'Kli, I'm sorry, L'Shayari Mincha. So the Gemara says, this addition of Rabbi Akiva, which is clearly talking about a derabanan, is talking on a derabanan level, as we mentioned earlier. But speaking specifically about Shayari Mincha, the leftovers of a mincha. What does that mean? So anytime you offer a flour offering, so you have what's called the kmitza, the komets, the portion, the fistful that's taken off by the kohen, that's going to be put in the kli sharis and then burned on top of the mizbeach. And then what's the rest of it called? Shayarim. That's the remainder. That's the balance of a mincha. Does that require a bowl? No, it does not require a bowl. If placed inside a bowl, the bowl will unify it. So now the Gemara is going to make a distinction. They're basically, a Kli unifies on a Daraisa level and on a Durabana level. How can that both be true? Gemara goes on to explain. So, Daraisa tzarech l'kli, a Kli mitzarfo. Shein tzarech l'kli, ein Kli mitzarfo. V'as Durabana, v'gazru da'afagav, dena tzarech l'kli, Kli mitzarfo. So the Gemara says, look, if I need the Kli unifies. If I don't need the Kli, and it's just serving there as a functional purpose, but I don't need it, the Kli is not going to unify. On a Daraisa.
Okay.
Hold on a second. The question's good? Just give me a moment. And then, along come the Chachamim, and the Chachamim said, fine, that's on the Daraisa level. And now the Chachamim legislated that even if we don't need it, and I put it in the bowl's going to unify on a Darabban level. The Mishnah in Adios that describes the Kli being mitzarf on a Durabban level is talking about the second category, where I don't need the Kli. The Jerusha that we quoted, Kafa Chas Malaya Ketores, that's talking about where I need the Kli. Okay, let's respond to Ben's question. He's asking the right question. When do I need the Kli? When do I not need the Kli? If I'd like a bowl, doesn't that mean I need it? So the Gemara, so no. So the if I need it in the context of a Kli Sharis, meaning that I need it so that the item is imbued with kedusha sagof. So, for example, the let's go back to the kmitza. See, by the kmitza, when I take a fistful of the flour off of my mincha, so now that's good, but it's not yet imbued with kedusha sagof. What do I have to do? I now have to put it into another kli, and then it receives its kedusha sagof. It gains status of the komets, and then I can burn it on top of the mizbeach. So there, from a functional standpoint, from a halachic standpoint, I need to put another kli. In such a circumstance, then the kli is going to be mitzarev, then the kli will unify. But if it's just there because I like the neatness, I like the organization, so on a deraisa level, it's not going to unify, and that's the legislation of the Chachamim. So the Gemara says, okay, as a klima tzav etenach, so let's get to our slavon amaykel ameimar. So the Gemara says, good, you did a great job explaining this in the context of flour. Because we understand there's a difference between the komets versus the shirayim. But when it comes to, when it comes to ketoros, when it comes to lavona, so when do we have this? Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravua, Kigon Shetzavon Agabe Kartavla. So the Gemara says, well, yeah, let's say that it was placed together on a kartavla. Rashi explains it's basically a hide, the hide of an animal that was, Rashi describes as being boiled. Okay, but in other words, I place it on something that may not have a toch. So daraisa yesh lo toch mitzaref, ein lo toch, ein mitzaref. So on a daraisa level, if there's a toch, so then that'll be mitzaref, because the fact now that it has a contour, it has an inside, so now on a daraisa level, it is comparable to kaf achas, and therefore it's going to unify. And then the Chachamim said that even if it's a flat leather hide, and I'm placing the ketoros on the flat leather hide, even though it doesn't have a cup, even though it doesn't have, it's not concave or convex. Okay, you'll forgive me, I forget which one's which. If it's not concave, so then it's on a daraisa level, it's not going to unify. On a derabbanan level, it would. Okay, so basically now what we've explained is, on one hand we have a drasha of how a kli unifies, that's kafa chasmalei ketoros. On the other hand, we have a Mishnah in Chagiga, which clearly is operating on the Rabban level. How can I hold both thoughts at the same time? Answer is, sometimes it's a Raisa, sometimes it's the Rabbanan. Gemara made basically two distinctions. One distinction is that if I need the Kli on a halachic level, that'll unify. If I don't need the Kli on a halachic level, just for a purpose of organization and neatness, it's not going to unify on a Raisa level. Only on a Rabban level. That's one. Or two, if I lay the ketoros out on a flat leather hide, so if it was concave, that unifies on a daraisa level. If it was flat, so on a daraisa level it won't unify, on a derabban level it will. So that's how we can hold both the drasha that we just learned and the Mishnah and Chagiga.
But the definition is flat, it's not defined as a cleat.
Right, agreed, that's exactly the point. So then, so on a derisa level. Right. Why the Chachamim made such legislation? I mean, right. That's a chumrah. That's exactly the point. That's the chumrah de Rabbanan. Upliga de Rav Chanina. I'm sorry. Upliga de Rabbi Chanina de Rabbi Chia bar Abba. Am Rabbi Chia bar Abba. Am Rabbi Yochanan. Meidusos Rabbi Akiva. Nishnez Mishnah Zu. And then the Gemara says, and oh, by the way, everything we just said for the last 10 minutes is not in agreement with Rabbi Chanin. Because with Rabbi Chia bar Abba, because Rabbi Chia bar Abba says our Mishnah in Chagiga. You know what the Mishnah in Chagiga is? The Mishnah in Chagiga is the Mishnah in Adios. They're one in the same. Meaning, this entire halacha of unification is all the Rabbanan. There is no Da'araisa aspect to unification that ecclesi mitzaref. What about the drasha? Asmachta. The drasha is not a bona fide drasha. It's not a din daraisa. It's really a derabbanan. And like we see time and again throughout Shas, the Chachamim attach their rabbinic legislation to a pasuk in the Torah. That's what we generally refer to as a smachta. But it's not a din daraisa. It's only a din derabbanan. And that's always true. So we have what is really now a basic machlokus, whether the concept of tziruf applies on a daraisa level or only a deraisa and a derabbanan level, depending, like we just pointed out, or know that it really only applies on a derabbanan level throughout. Okay, let's stop over here. Okay, tomorrow kal v'chomer, dayo, pircha. Okay, stay tuned. Good stuff coming up tomorrow. Yom Kippur, we are going to meet before mincha. I made it universal. It's going to be before everyone's mincha. Okay, whatever. We'll get to...
You combine everything, you put your comb on...
Yeah.